2 hours earlier than usual, we are presenting at this time The Corwin Show, starring Charles Lawton. We will interrupt the broadcast for any late news developments.
Man is a long time coming. Man will yet win. Brother may yet line up with brother.
Columbia presents Corwin. From Hollywood, Norman Corwin brings you the first of three broadcasts entitled An American Trilogy, starring the eminent actor Charles Lawton in special adaptations of the works of three American writers, Carl Sandburg, Thomas Wolfe, and Walt Whitman. Each program will be narrated by Mr. Lawton and scored by Bernard Herrmann. Tonight, Charles Lawton in Norman Corwin's production of Sandburg.
Nothing we can part with. Nothing we can say goodbye to. Nothing of material and practical contribution is to be mentioned for comparison with the pouring out of the blood of our picked and chosen youth on altars dedicated to national existence and the rainbow hopes of the four freedoms. Death carries majesty. The dust of vanished youth can be sacred. The phantom of a good fighting man can come back asking,
how goes the flag I fought for? Has any man's dream of a better world been helped?
Who do you think you are? Where do you think you come from? From toenails to the hair of your head, you're mixed of the earth, of the air. Listen to the laboratory man tell you what you are, what you're made of, man. Listen while he takes you apart.
Weighing 150 pounds, you hold 3,500 cubic feet of gas, oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen. From the 22 pounds and 10 ounces of carbon in you is the filling for 9,000 lead pencils. In your blood are 50 grains of iron. And in the rest of your frame, enough iron to make a spike that would hold your weight.
You're a walking drugstore. And a cosmos. And a phantasmagoria treading a lonesome valley. One of the people. One of the people. Seeing sun, fog, zero weather. Seeing fire, flood. Famine, having meditations, one of the people. Yes, the people. A seething of saints and sinners, toilers, loafers, oxen, apes, the one and only source of armies, navies, work gangs, the living, flowing breath of the history of nations. The little family of man hugging the little ball of earth. The root holds of the earth nourish the majestic people. A new generations with names never heard of plow deep in broken drums, piling revolt on revolt across night valleys, letting loose insurrections, uprisings, plodding in a somnambulism of fog and rain, till a given moment exploded by long-prepared events.
Thank you.
You can drum on immense drums the monotonous daily motions of the people. On immense drums, you can drum the monotonous daily motions of the people, taking from earth and air their morsels of bread and love, a carryover from yesterday into tomorrow. You can blow on great brass horns the awful clamors of war and revolution when swarming anonymous shadow shapes obliterate old names, big names, and cross out what was and offer what is on a fresh blank page.
Across the bitter years, the deathless dream will be the stronger. The dream of equity will win.
Each man pictures his hell or heaven different. Some have snug, home-like heavens, suburban, well-kept. Some have a wild, storm-swept heaven. Their happiness has been in storms. Heaven must have storms mixed with fair weather. And hell, for some, is a jail. For others, a factory. For others, a kitchen. For others, a place of many polite liars. What kind of a liar are you? People lie because they don't remember clear what they saw. People lie because they can't help making a story better than it was, the way it happened. People tell white lies so as to be decent to others. People lie in a pinch, hating to do it, but lying on because it might be worse. And people lie just to be liars for a crooked personal gain. What sort of a liar are you? A liar lies to nations. A liar lies to the people.
Hitler, April the 1st, 1939. The German people have no thought of invading any country.
A liar takes the blood of the people and drinks this blood with a laugh and a lie.
Hitler, September the 30th, 1942. We shall take Stalingrad. You may depend upon it. And you can be sure of the firm conviction that no human being shall ever push us away from that spot.
This liar is an old one. We know him many years. He's as straight as a dog's hind leg. He's as straight as a corkscrew. He's as white as a black cat's foot at midnight. Who shall speak for the people? Who knows the works from A to Z so he can say,
I know what the people want.
When have the people been half as rotten as what the panderers to the people dangle before crowds?
Step right up and get your panacole. Cures cancer, flat feet, heart disease, gallstones and dandruff, $1 a bottle. Together with a year's membership in the German-American Bund. Guaranteed to cure patriotism, make you hate Jews, love General Franco and lose friends. All for $1.
When has the fiber of the people been as shoddy as what is sold to the people by cheaters? What is it the panderers and cheaters of the people play with and trade on? The credulity of believers and hopers. And when is a heart less of a heart because of belief and hope? What is the tremulous line between credulity on the one side and on the other the hypotheses and illusions of inventors, discoverers, Navigators who chart their course by what they hope and believe is beyond the horizon. What is a stratosphere balloon 14 miles from the Earth or a sunken glasshouse on the sea bottom? Unless a bet that man can shove on beyond yesterday's record of man, the hoper, the believer. How like a sublime sanctuary of human credulity is that room where amid tubes, globes, and retorts, they shoot with hydrogen and batter with fire streams of power, hoping to smash the atom.
The constitution of a neutral atom can be studied by hypothecating a process by which N electrons are captured and bound in the field of force surrounding...
Who are these bipeds trying to take apart the atom and isolate its electrons and make it tell why it is what it is?
Believers and hopers.
Let the work of their fathers and elder brothers be canceled this instant. And what would happen?
Nothing. Only every tool, bus, car, bulb, print, film, instrument, depending for its life on electrodynamic power, would stop and stand dumb and silent.
Believers and hopers. Flag and a dream out of time. The evening star inviolable over the coal mines. The shimmer of northern lights across a bitter winter night. The blue hills beyond the smoke of the steelworks. The 10-cent crocus bulb blooming in a used car salesroom. The horseshoe over the door. The luck piece in the pocket. The kiss. And the comforting laugh. Hope is an echo. Hope ties itself yonder. Yonder. I have looked over the earth and seen the swarming of different people to a different god. White men with prayers to a white god.
Where on the Lord do I put my trust? Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in thy righteousness. Bow down thine ear to me. Deliver me speedily. Be thou my strong rock.
Black men with prayers to a black god. Yellow faces before altars to a yellow-faced god. Amid burning fires, they have pictured God with a naked skin. Amid frozen rocks, they have pictured God clothed and shaggy as a polar bear. I have met stubs of men broken in the pain and mutilation of war saying God is forgetful, too far off. Too far away. I have met people saying they talked with God face to face. They tell God.
Hello, God. How are you, God?
They get familiar with God and hold intimate conversations. Yet I have met other people saying...
I am afraid to see God face to face, for I would ask questions, even as God might ask me questions.
I have seen these facts of God and man... An anxious earthworms hunting for a home. I have seen the spotted sunset sky filled with flights and wings. And I have heard high in the twilight blue the propellers of man on the evening airmail droning from Omaha to Chicago, droning across Iowa and Illinois. I have said, the prints of many new wings, many fresh flights, many clean propellers shall be on the sky before we understand God and the works of wings and air. In the casual drift of routine, in the day-by-day run of mine, in the play of careless circumstance, the anecdotes emerge. Alive with people, in words, errands, motives, and silhouettes. Taller than the immediate moment, the anecdotes emerge.
Is it far to the next town?
It seems farther than it is, but you find that it ain't.
Sergeant, if a private calls you a darn fool, what would you do?
I'd throw him in the guardhouse.
If he just thinks you're a darn fool and doesn't say it, then what?
Nothing.
We'll let it go at that. Get off this estate.
What for?
Because it's mine.
Where did you get it?
From my father.
Where did he get it?
From his father.
And where did he get it?
He fought for it.
Well, I'll fight you for it.
Which way to the post office, boy?
I don't know.
You don't know much, do you?
Nope, but I ain't lost.
What do you know? The number 42, which I picked as a winner, won the raffle.
Did you guess the number 42 or did you have a system?
I had a system.
What was it?
I took up the old family album, and there on page 7 was my grandmother and grandfather, both on page 7. And I said to myself, this is easy, for 7 times 7 is the number that'll win, and 7 times 7 is 42.
I see.
What was the last thing Paul Revere said to his horse on the famous ride?
Whoa.
Too bad you have to work in this kind of a soup parlor, waiter.
I work here, customer, but I don't eat here.
Isn't that an iceberg on the horizon, Captain?
Yes, madam.
Well, what if we get into a collision with it?
The iceberg, madam, will move right along as though nothing had happened.
No, no, I tell you no! No, no, I tell you no! No, no, I tell you no!
Pardon me, but what are you yelling for?
I'm a yes man taking a vacation. No, no, I tell you no! No, no!
Have you a criminal lawyer in this burg?
We think so, but we haven't been able to prove it on him.
I hear a burglar in the house.
Well, let's wait. If he finds anything worth stealing, we'll take it away from him.
The anecdotes emerge. Alive with people in words, errands, motives. Taller than the immediate moment. The people laugh. The people sing. The gang in its working clothes. The picnic bunch in its best bib and tucker. Hicks from the sticks and big town hicks. They sing whatever they want to. And it may be the old rugged cross or the old gray mare or a late hit. They are hit by the hit songs. It's only a hit when it hits them. They soon drop it like a hot potato. Or they hold on to it for keeps. And whenever they keep changing a song with tunes twisted 40 ways and new verses you never heard of, at last, then, it's a folk song. He was in Cincinnati. She in Burlington. He was in a gang of postal telegraph linemen. She was a pot wrestler in a boarding house. She wrote him...
The crying is lonely.
He answered...
The same here.
The winter went by, and he came back, and they married. And he went away again where rainstorms knocked down telegraph poles and wires dropped with frozen sleet. And again she wrote him...
The crying is lonely.
And again he answered...
The same here.
Their 5 children are in the public schools. He votes and is a taxpayer. They are known among those who know them as honest American citizens living honest lives. Many things that bother other people never bother them. They have their 5 children, and they're a couple. A pair of birds that call to each other and satisfy. As sure as he goes away, She writes him.
The crying is lonely.
And he flashes back the old answer.
The same here.
It's a long time since he was a gang lineman at Cincinnati, and she was a pot wrestler in a Burlington boarding house. Yet they never get tired of each other. They're a couple.
Machine, yes, the machine. Never wastes anybody's time. Never watches the foreman. Never talks back. Never says what is right or wrong. The machine, yes, the machine. Cuts your production cost. A man is a man, and what can you do with him? A man is a man, and what can you do with him? But a machine. Now you take a machine. No kids, no woman, never hungry, never thirsty. All a machine needs is a little regular attention and plenty of grease. And plenty of grease. And plenty of grease. And plenty of grease. A father sees a son nearing manhood. What shall he tell that son?
Life is hard. Be steel. Be a rock.
And this might stand him for the storms and serve him for humdrum and monotony and guide him amid sudden betrayals and tighten him for slack moments.
Life is a soft loam. Be gentle. Go easy.
And this, too, might serve him. Brutes have been gentled where lashes failed. The growth of a frail flower in a path up has sometimes shattered and split a rock. A tough will counts. So does desire. Tell him too much money has killed men and left them dead years before burial. The quest of lucre beyond a few easy needs has twisted good enough men sometimes into dry, thwarted worms. Tell him time as a stuff can be wasted. Tell him to be a fool every so often and to have no shame over having been a fool, yet learning something out of every folly, hoping to repeat none of the cheap follies, thus arriving at intimate understanding of a world numbering many fools. Tell him to be alone often and get at himself. And above all, tell himself no lies about himself. Whatever the white lies and protective fronts he may use amongst other people. Tell him solitude is creative if he's strong. And the final decisions are made in silent rooms. Tell him to be different from other people if it comes natural and easy being different. Let him have lazy days seeking his deeper motives. Let him seek deep for where he's a born natural. Then he may understand Shakespeare and the Wright brothers, Pasteur, Pavlov, Michael Faraday, and free imaginations bringing changes into a world resenting change. He'll be lonely enough to have time for the work he knows as his own. The people is a cauldron and reservoir of the human reserves that shape history. The people have the element of surprise. Where are the kings today? What has become of their solid and fastened thrones? Who are the temporary puppets holding sway while anything waits around a corner, sits in the shadows, and holds an axe, waiting for the appointed hour.
The Tsar has 8 million men with guns and bayonets. Nothing can happen to the Tsar.
They said that for years. As a portent and an assurance, they said with owl faces,
nothing can happen to the Tsar.
Yet the Tsar and his bodyguard of 8 million vanished. And the Tsar stood in a cellar before a little firing squad. And the command of fire was given. And the Tsar traveled into an ethereal, uncharted Siberia. While two Kaisers also vanished from thrones, ancient and established in blood and iron. Two Kaisers backed by 10 million bayonets had their crowns in a gutter. In the shove and whirl of unforeseen combustions, the people, yes, the people, move eternally in the elements of surprise, changing from hammer to bayonet and back to hammer. The Hallelujah Chorus, forever shifting its star soloists. Who can fight against the future? What is the decree of tomorrow? Haven't the people gone on and on, always taking more of their own? How can the orders of the day be against the people in this time? Who can stop them from taking more and more of their own? The old anvil laughs at many broken hammers. There are men who can't be bought. The people will live on. The learning and blundering people will live on. Tricked and sold and again sold, they go back to the nourishing earth for root holds. The people, so peculiar in renewal and comeback, you can't laugh off their capacity to take it. Can the wilderness be put behind? Shall man always go on? Dog eat dog, who says so? The stronger, and who is the stronger? And how shall the stronger hold on as the stronger? Will tomorrow write?
Of the people, by the people, for the people?
What mockers ever wrung a crop from a waiting soil? Or when did cold logic bring forth a child? They asked a kite-flying skygazer.
What use is?
And he wished in return to know.
What use is a baby?
The dreaming scholars who quested the useless, who wanted to know merely for the sake of knowing. They sought and harnessed electrodynamic volts, becoming in time 30 billion horses in one country. Becoming in time 30 billion horsepower. And is this an early glimpse, a dim beginning, the first hill in a series of hills? What comes after the spectrum? With what will the test tubes be shaken tomorrow? For what will the acetylene torch and pneumatic chisel be scrapped? What will the international partnerships of the world laboratories track down next? What new fuels, amalgams, alloys, seeds, crossbreeds, unforeseen shortcuts to power? Whose guess is better than anybody else's on whether the breed of firebringers is run out? Whether light rays, death rays, laugh rays are now for us only in a dim beginning. Wither away. And where do we go from here?
Across the bitter years and the howling winters, the deathless dream will be the stronger. The dream of equity will come.
Man is a long time coming. Man will yet win. Brother will line up with brother.
You have been listening.
listening to Charles Laughton and Norman Corwin's adaptation and production of Sandberg, first of an American trilogy based on the works of three great modern writers. With Mr. Laughton in the cast were Hans Conried, Wally Mayer, Mercedes McCambridge, Dick Ryan, Joan Loring, Will Wright, Joe Granby, Loreen Tuttle, Bob Bruce, Norman Field, Earl Ross, Horace Willard, Peter Chong, Franklin Parker, Harry Bartell, Edward Marr, and Earl Robinson. Bernard Herrmann composed and conducted the original score. At this same time next week, CBS will bring you the second program of an American trilogy, Corwin's production of selections from the writings of Thomas Wolfe, again with an original score by Columbia's prize-winning Bernard Herrmann. Columbia presents Corwin. From Hollywood, Norman Corwin brings you the second of three broadcasts entitled An American Trilogy, starring the eminent actor Charles Laughton in Mr. Corwin's adaptation of the works of three American writers, Carl Sandburg, Thomas Wolfe, and Walt Whitman. The score is composed and conducted by Bernard Herrmann. Tonight, Charles Laughton and Norman Corwin's production of Thomas Wolfe.
Thomas Wolfe died 6 years ago at the age of 37. He'd been ill for months and had a hunch he wasn't going to get better. In the last letter he ever wrote, he said,
I'm sneaking this against orders, but I've got a hunch, and I wanted to write these words to you. I've made a long voyage and been to a strange country, and I've seen the dark man very close. And I don't think I was too much afraid of him. So much of mortality still clings to me. I wanted most desperately to live and still do. And I thought about you all a thousand times and wanted to see you all again. And there was the impossible anguish and regret of all the work I had not done, of all the work I had to do.
He died around the same time that the betrayed republics of Spain and Czechoslovakia were dying. A year before the formal opening of World War II, and 6 years before the Nazis fell to lynching American flyers. But even that long ago, Wolfe had seen enough of fascism to realize it would have to be totally destroyed before men could live in security. Hitlerism, he wrote, was a recrudescence of an old barbarism. Its racial nonsense and cruelty,
its naked worship of brute force, its suppression of truth and resort to lies and myths, its ruthless contempt for the individual, each of these is a throwback to that spirit of lust and greed and force which has always been the true enemy of mankind. But this spirit is not confined to Germany. It belongs to no one race. One sees traces of it everywhere. Takes on many disguises, many labels. America has it too in various forms, for wherever ruthless men conspire together for their own ends, wherever the rule of dog-eat-dog is dominant, there it breeds. Its roots sink down into something primitive, and these roots will somehow have to be eradicated if man is to win his ultimate freedom and not be plunged back into savagery and perish utterly from the earth.
This Wolfe wrote years before it became clear to most people that the roots of fascism would indeed have to be destroyed. He knew instinctively there wasn't room enough on this earth for both fascism and democracy. But mainly, however, he wrote with enormous zest about America. The America he felt so keenly. Always in his writing was the patriotism of a spirit who loved passionately every square inch of the vast canvas of the states. Today, when an American fighting man overseas says,
"Gosh, I'd like to be back home. Just to be there for a little furlough and kind of take it easy for a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? Just to be home."
Likely as not, the physical America he remembers and thinks of is pretty close to what Tom Wolfe remembered and thought of. Likely as not, it's Wolfe's image of home that the GI longs to return to after total victory is won. An America of cities and towns and wilderness, of rivers and railroads. An America probably lying somewhere between the lines of Wolfe you will hear tonight.
America is a fabulous country, the only fabulous country. It is the place where miracles not only happen, but they happen all the time. It is the place of the howling winds, of the hurrying of leaves in October, the place of fierce bitten colors in October, when all of the wild sweet woods flame up. It is the place of the autumnal moons, hung low and orange at the frosty edges of the pines. It is the place of frost and silence, the red barn and the sound of the stabled hooves, the bright tatters of old circus posters, the wild winter's morning and the wind with the powdery snow that has been howling all night long, the solitude and the branches of the spruce and hemlock piled with snow, the river boats tethered to the wharf, the wild gray snow of storm-whited morning whipping across them. America's the place of the immense and pungent smell of breakfast. The country sausages and the ham and eggs, the smoking wheat cakes and the fragrant coffee. It is the place where you come up through Virginia on the great trains in the nighttime and rumble slowly across the wide Potomac and see the morning sunlight on the nation's dome at Washington, and where the fat man shaving in the Pullman washroom grunts,
"What's this? What's this we're coming to, Washington?"
"Yep, this is Washington. You getting off here?"
"Who, me? Oh, no, I'm going on to Baltimore."
It's the place of the corner drug and cigar store with the mixing sharp and sweet smells of perfume and stationery, of tobacco and the soda bar, the huge stillness of the water tower, the fading light, the rails secret and alive and trembling with the oncoming train. It is a place of the immense and lonely earth, the place of fat ears and abundance, where they grow cotton, corn and wheat, the wine-red apples of October, the good tobacco. America's the place where great boats are baying at the harbor's mouth, where great ships are putting out to sea. It is the place where great boats are blowing in the Gulf of Night, and where the river, the dark and secret river, full of strange time, is flowing forever by us to the sea. There will always be the great rivers flowing in the darkness, the rivers that have bounded so many nameless lives, which have girdled the wilderness, and so much hard, brilliant, and sensational living, so much pain, beauty, ugliness, love, and wild exultancy. Build great engines yet and grander towers, but always the rivers run in the day, in the night, in the dark, draining immensely their imperial tides out of the wilderness, washing and flowing by the coasts of the fabulous city, by all the little ticking sounds of time, by all the million lives and deaths of the city. Always the rivers run, and always there will be great ships upon the tide,
And in the night, 1,000 men have died, while the river, always the river, the dark, eternal river, full of strange, secret time, is flowing by us. By us to the sea. America's the place of trains. The great train shed, dense with smoke and acrid with its smell, full of the slow pantings of 12 engines, passive as great cats. The mighty station, with the ceaseless thronging of its illimitable life, and all of the murmurous, remote, and mighty sounds of time forever held there in the station. Tonight in this America, the great barn shapes and solid shadows in the running sweep of moon-whitened countryside. The wailing whistle of the fast express. The flares and steamings on the tracks and the swing and bob of lanterns in the yards. The sudden glare of mighty engines over sleeping faces in the night. The Transcontinental Limited stroking 80 miles an hour across the continent, and the small dark towns whipped by like bullets. And there is only the fan-like stroke of the secret, immense, and lonely earth again. And then there are the mile-long freights with their strong, solid, clanking, heavy loneliness at night. And the silent freight of cars that curve away among raw, piney desolations with their promise of new lands and unknown distances. The huge, attentive gape, emptiness. In the watches of the night, the never-sleeping night, the sudden unseen faces, voices, laughter, and farewells upon a lonely little nighttime station, the voices of Americans.
Goodbye, Ma. Goodbye, Pa.
Goodbye, Johnny.
I'll send you my address as soon as I get to camp. Don't forget, send me some letters.
Yes.
Don't forget.
We'll
goodbye.
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 And then the secret, subdued, rustling past the thick green curtains, the low tones of the porter.
Before, sir.
And then the whistle cry. The tolling bell. The train mounting to its classic monotone again. And presently the last lights of a little town. The floating void and loneliness of moon-haunted earth. Gazes down upon the vast desolation of the American coasts, and on all the glut and hiss of tides, on all the surge and foaming slide of waters on lone beaches. The moon blazes down on 18,000 miles of coast, on the million sucks and scoops and hollows of the shore, and on the great wink of the sea. The moon blazes down upon the wilderness. It falls on sleeping woods. It drips through moving trees. It swarms in weaving patterns on the earth. And it fills the cat's still eye with blazing yellow. The moon sleeps over mountains and lays in silence in the desert. And it carves the shadows of great rocks like time. The moon is mixed with flowing rivers. It is buried in the heart of great lakes. And it trembles on the water like bright fish. The moon steeps all the earth in its living substance. It paints continental space ghostly light. The moonlight sleeps above dark herds, moving with slow grazings in the night. It covers lonely little villages. It falls upon the unbroken undulation of the wilderness. It blazes on windows and moves across the face of sleeping men. Trains cross the continent in a swirl of dust and thunder. The leaves fly down the tracks behind them. The trains cleave through gulch and gully. They rumble with spoke thunder on the bridges above the brown wash of mighty rivers. They toil through the hills. They skirt the rough brown stubble of shorn fields. They whip past empty stations in the little towns. And their great stride pounds its even pulse across America. Field and hill and lift and gulch and hollow. A plain, a desert, a plantation. A mighty landscape. An immensity of fold and convolution that can never be remembered. That can never be forgotten. That has never been described. Weary with harvest. Potent with every fruit and all, rank, crude, unharnessed, everlasting and magnificent, a cry for space, an ecstasy. Play us a tune on an unbroken spinet and let the bells ring, let the bells ring. Play music now, play us a tune on an unbroken spinet. Do not strike music from old broken keys. Do not make ghosts with faded tinklings on the yellowed board. But play us a tune on an unbroken spinet. Play lively music when the instrument was new. Let us see Mozart playing in the parlor. Let us hear the sounds of the ladies' voices. But more than that, throw the light of Wednesday morning on the Third Crusade, and let us see Athens on an average day.